wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
So, Dear Science, Joel is still in the WAPS somewhere in the arsehole of South Island, so we have to do this over the phone again. But we've got some cool topics lined up. What have you got for us today?
I have so many topics, but I would just like to say big shout out to Christina. Last show ever. What?
This is bittersweet, wow. Man.
Bittersweet, just like hops. But before we get into hops, which I will talk about, do you have any favorite Dear Science stories from the past?
Maybe not my favorite, but the one that kind of lingers is definitely all the Audu stories that somehow we always end up talking about.
We do. Turns out nature loves a good orgy.
So do the Dear Science listeners. We're just meeting that demand.
Indeed. Well, unfortunately, we won't be talking about orgies today unless we're talking about orgies of flavor, and that's where we're talking about hops. And hops, of course, are used in beer. So that gives it that bitterness that you might have in the old IPA. And so a recent publication has come out saying that, hey, beer hops, there might be some chemical compounds in there that could be good for you.
This is a great news story, considering I've had some beers last night, and I feel like this would be quite reassuring to have some sort of health benefits, given how appalling I feel right now.
Well, as you may be able to experience firsthand, beer overall, not really good for you, unfortunately. But these hop flowers, is I guess what they are, there are some chemical compounds in there that they were able to extract and then test with different types of neurons to see if they could protect against Alzheimer's disease. So Alzheimer's is, of course, a disease that affects the brain and memories and functioning, and it's very debilitating. And one of the things that happens in Alzheimer's is there's the formation of these amyloid beta plaques. And so, of course, we don't really understand all the ins and outs of Alzheimer's, but we do know is that these plaques form and that they can inhibit signaling of neurons in the brain. So what this study did is they extracted different types of hops that are used in beers. And what they did is they tested this in the lab, like looking at some cells in a petri dish, to find that these chemical compounds in there actually did inhibit the clumping of these amyloid beta plaques, which could mean there are some compounds in hops that could be beneficial.
And that's really interesting, because I think a lot of the negative sides of alcohol kind of include lots of cancers and do impact the brain and cognitive functioning as well. So is this kind of something that could potentially cancel out, or is it a completely different field entirely?
Well, that is a completely different field. And of course, that is probably wishful thinking for all of the beer drinkers out there. But basically, the benefits of this could be that, well, maybe if there is these chemicals in the hops themselves, these polyphenols, if we can extract them, we might be able to come up with a different or a pharmaceutical that could help with this particular disease. So I wouldn't say drinking 13 or 14 beers is going to be helpful, but if we can extract the actual compounds themselves from the hops in that beer and use it in a different application, that's where the benefit would come from.
So for all your listeners out there, before you pick up your next craft hazy sour IPA to cancel out the risk of Alzheimer's, maybe just wait a few years for science to catch up and isolate that compound.
Yeah, maybe don't.
And maybe don't eat pure hops either, because that is rancid.
Right, so we've still got to optimize this one. But the things we put in beer might not all be bad for us. That's the moral of the story.
Well, that's excellent to know. And another wonderful thing to learn on Dear Science. So let's move it on, because I think there's so much more exciting stuff to cover today.
We do. And this next story, it's a big one. It's definitely a big one. And there's been a recent report. It's looked at the carbon emissions of billionaires.
I feel like I know where this is going, but are there any surprises here from this study?
I was surprised, I will tell you that. So get ready for this. It may not be surprising that billionaires have different lifestyles than regular people. I mean, you know, the yachts, the private jets, the champagne breakfasts, all of those things. But the extent of their carbon emissions compared to the regular person was surprising to me, because I'm not sure it's going to be a lot more. But this report says it's actually a million times greater than just the regular person.
A million?
A million times greater carbon emissions from a billionaire compared to you and me.
Just per capita on average, I suppose.
Yes.
Wow. Just fascinating, but also so grim.
Oh, it's very grim. That was very much the tone of the report, that the richest people in the world are responsible for polluting the most, which isn't super great. And a big reason why they're carbon emissions were so much greater than basically most everyone else is that they are, a majority of them are heavily invested in fossil fuels.
The old oil magnate rich heiresses, eh?
It turns out, yeah, billionaires, they're into fossil fuels, and so they have the most to lose by any government legislation that would try to reduce, of course, emissions from said fossil fuels. So this is where we can kind of get into a little spiral of research here, because there have been other studies previously that have tried to follow the money, the most money in the world, and where it goes, where it's spent. And, well, it turns out that also these billionaires and the fossil fuel industry really do like protecting their interests, which means things like sowing disinformation on climate denial. And so there was a study about a decade ago that looked at the periods of 2003 to 2010 to find that there was over $500 million funneled towards this climate denial propaganda, is what it ended up being. And a lot of that came from the richest people, the fossil fuel industries, which, of course, I mean, it makes sense from a business standpoint, but it goes against the science and what we know about climate change and how it is derived from things like the fossil fuel industry.
That's just so sad. And I feel like we always talk about how people in low-lying Pacific nations and some poorer countries are kind of bearing the brunt of climate-related disasters as well. But meanwhile, you've got some man sitting up in his ivory tower with all his links to the oil industry, fossil fuels and the like, just kind of playing games with people's lives. It's a bit sad.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there, Christina, because the people most impacted by climate change, and if we wanted to think about this financially as we are with this report, taxpayers, the people that are going to have to pay the most to deal with climate change are all of us. But the people most responsible, as per this report, actually aren't paying equal fair share of taxes. And they are actually getting subsidized heavily. So this is one thing that the report specifically mentions, is that those that are responsible should be paying equal fair share of taxes rather than having subsidies to the tune of $500 billion per year. You heard that right. $500 billion per year. Things like tax breaks for the big emitting industries are occurring globally.
Oh my God, I think, oh wow, there's so much to take in here.
There is, there absolutely is, and that's what this report is trying to highlight, is that what we're doing is we're actually lining the pockets of the people that are polluting the most, which seems pretty counterintuitive.
Yeah.
And yeah, it not good, I think, is the term that we will most use for this current situation.
I think if we want to get really apocalyptic, in the end, when the world floods or whatever is going to happen with climate change, those who are going to be jumping on the apocalypse arcs will likely be the likes of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, because they've got the money to do so, buy themselves a ticket to protect themselves.
There is a large gap in the wealth of billionaires compared to even probably the richest people any of us have ever met.
And they're just using their private jets to go for a trip to the shops, contributing.
I don't think they go to many shops.
No.
I think they have people do that for them.
Yeah, but you've got your million times more emissions just from their crazy lifestyle as well. So something to watch in the coming years.
Right. So the idea is this report also outlines some things that, of course, we can do to help, you know, try to save the planet. And this, of course, report is all from a monetary standpoint. So one of them, as I just mentioned, is equal taxes for the biggest emitters, reducing things like tax subsidies for these polluting industries, but also for people that have like a KiwiSaver or pensions or retirement funds, make sure that you also aren't investing in fossil fuels. That's something that you can follow up with KiwiSaver, and they're starting to be more and more investment opportunities that away from fossil fuels, because otherwise collectively we all also are contributing to their companies.
Yeah, and I think in terms of ethical investments, it's a whole another kettle of fish that we're not going to talk about today because we simply do not have the time. But yeah, cryptocurrency, which is terrible for the environment. It's so interesting though.
Yes. I mean, fossil fuel industry isn't the only industry that is polluting, but of course it is the major one that, as this report mentions, a majority of the richest people on the planet have a stake in.
That was very chilling. So let's move on to something a little bit more upbeat, hopefully. What's our third topic for our final Dear Science today?
Final Dear Science topic will be about mass extinctions and a bit of a mystery that has been solved.
Is this like a Scooby-Doo level mystery or something a little bit more grounded in reality?
This one is a little bit more grounded. Last time we talked about a mass extinction, it was a little bit more localized, dealing with frogs and some of their excessive energy consumption habits.
The extracurricular activities.
Right. this one is, we're talking about on a global level. So the Earth has had five notable mass extinction events going back to about 500 million years ago, about 500 million years. So that we've had five of them. Scientists have pretty good evidence to say we're currently in the middle or on the cusp of a sixth mass extinction event. But what they wanted to do was understand why maybe this first one that happened 500 million years ago, why that one occurred. And they were able to get some very good clues to find out that, this could be due to a lack of oxygen in places like the ocean or freshwaters. So what that means, without lack of oxygen, multicellular creatures are going to have trouble with respiration, which means a lot of different species are going to die out. And that is why they believe this first mass extinction event occurred.
So this lack of oxygen hits maybe a few ocean creatures, and then essentially the entire ecosystem just collapses?
That is what was being proposed, yes.
And how did they kind of reach this conclusion? Because it's quite a very long time ago, obviously.
Right, so basically, the way you have to do this is you look at the fossil records. That's really the only way to get any information on some of these multicellular creatures from way back when. And what they found, is that a lot of creatures, the ones that did survive this mass extinction event, had what we'd say high surface area to volume ratios, meaning that they were able to take up more oxygen than some of their other counterparts just based on their structure and how these creatures looked. And that would help them survive compared to some of their competitors.
Wow, okay. So this is, you said that we're on the cusp of another potential mass extinction event. How worried should we be? I mean, I think we've been talking quite apocalyptically, and this time round there's also man-made lots of issues that might exacerbate what is currently a very dire situation.
Yes, dire is again the theme of today. And so it turns out there has actually been some recent research looking at fresh waters currently, and they're starting to lose their oxygen as well, which could trigger or help accelerate the types of extinction that we would be predicting and are actually starting to see.
That's, yeah, I don't know, not good. Another not good scenario that we've been discussing quite a bit.
Yeah, a bit of a downer today. I thought we would keep the theme in line with Christina leaving us forever.
Oh, this is really morbid, and I appreciate you trawling the internet to find the saddest stories you can tell. Yeah.
That's all I can do in a moment like this.
Any final words of wisdom that you can impart on us? Not that you're leaving, but final bits of wisdom that you can impart to the listeners for today, just to kind of boost their spirits.
You should probably just party, right? Isn't that what we learned?
Party like it's the end of the world.
Party like it's 1999.
The previous predicted apocalypse.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
We'll leave you with that then. Dear Science, everyone, and thank you so much, Joel, for joining us from way out in the WAPS.
My pleasure.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.